you don't want to be in an argument with reality. And the reality is that life changed for everybody in February, March, right? And I think it really comes down to, so if you're selling with the, or going to market with the same messaging, the same language and the same processes and systems that you did in January, you are in an argument with reality. If you're selling the same stuff in the same way, people look at you like, do they have any idea what's going on? Are you plugged in at all? Do you have an internet connection? Like what is going on with you?
You've landed inside Launch Street, the business innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Tamara here, your host, coming to you at the very beginning of, oh my gosh, December and the end of 2020. Here we go. Or should I say, here we are. I'm really excited about the interview that I'm putting out in the world today. It's actually with someone who I just absolutely admire and adore. She's absolutely brilliant and probably one of the best salespeople I've ever met. Now, what's funny about this interview is we actually did it back in, I want to say March or April. And we, if you're in our Everyday Innovators tribe, you actually have access to it immediately. We stream it live, the interview, so you get the info before it even comes out on the podcast. And we were talking about how to sell when times are uncertain, you know, with all this COVID stuff and everything going on. And, you know, I was kind of trying to figure out when to release it. And I realized this morning, here we are in 2020 at the very end of it, and things are still uncertain, even more so. And the interview that I had with Merit is even more applicable now than it was when we even did the interview. So I'm excited to bring this to you. Now, you might be asking, Tamara, what does sales have to do with innovation? Well, it's one thing to have an idea. It's another one to be able to communicate it for buy-in. It's another thing to get people to listen to your ideas and to actually say yes to them. So that's where sales comes into this. Merit Guest is phenomenal. She's going to introduce herself in the interview. You're going to absolutely love her. Her wisdom is just, wow, it is spot on. Now, before I get into the interview, I got one thing I got to tell you because the timing could not be more perfect with the release of this interview today. Okay. At the beginning of every month, we open the doors to new members at the Everyday Innovators Tribe. It's only the first and the second of every month. And guess what today is? Dun, dun, dun. It's the first. So you get access to the Everyday Innovators Tribe. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to our website, click on Join Tribe, and like it says, join me. In there, we have these monthly innovation jam sessions where you bring the challenge, I bring the facilitation. Together with your community, we brainstorm and come up with solutions for you. Before I even get into the other things that the tribe has, I just want to take a moment to recognize how powerful and how lucky we all are to have access to these jam sessions. I know, I'm the host, I'm a little biased, but here's the thing. Companies pay me a lot of money to come in and do these innovation workshops, what I call jam sessions with them. They bring a challenge and then we work through all these different exercises to actually get them the solutions they need to move forward. And guess what? You get that as part of your Everyday Innovator Tribe membership. And wait a minute, not only do you get that, you get it every month. We do them one a month. How amazing is that? So you get access to that. So imagine for a moment that you're in this tribe, you've got this incredible community, you've got access to resources and tools as a whole library, so you get innovation when you need it. There's live Q&As so that you're never stuck. You can submit at any time and we'll answer them for you. And then on top of all that, every month, you get to bring your real world challenges or opportunities to the table, and we get to come together to find those innovative solutions in the real world so that you get to go back to your team and your leadership and your clients and go, how about this? Yeah, it's so powerful. Join us December 1st and 2nd, and then it shuts down again until 2021. All right, on to the interview. I'll see you in the Everyday Innovators Tribe. You're really going to like this one.
So I'm super excited about today because we're going to dig into persuasion, getting buy-in, sales, which all of us are in some way or another, whether we're doing it with clients, we're doing it to our leadership, we're doing it to our team, but whatever it is, we're selling. And particularly when it comes to, I think, innovative ideas and new paths and having to get buy-in for change, we're in sales. So Merritt, with that, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and then we are going to dig in. And let me just tell everyone, I've known Merritt for such a long time, so this is so exciting. So there might be like some tangents in this conversation.
Just a few. Well, thanks, Tamara, for having me. I'm super excited to be here. Since 1998, I've been doing sales management training, speaking professionally and on business development topics. And most of the people that I've done work with have been they're entrepreneurs, they're business leaders, they're very good at what they do, and they're super frustrated because it should be easier to do business than it is, right? The guy down the street's getting the business because they're good at the sales part, but they're better at doing the actual work. Yeah. And I would say most of my clients sell more like custom engineered solutions or creative things. So, you know, sales was not something that they really wanted to be good at. Right? They're creatives. And, you know, it requires a little bit more than, you know, just your standard, how do I get through sales process?
So just relate that to the people in our community. So really, like the people, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, some people, in fact, that I interacted with today, people who sell energy packages, people who do B2B IT sales, people who do branding and marketing consulting, kind of all that kind of realm of not the like, here's my widget, let me sell it. But I'm glad there wasn't anything inappropriate on that one. Here's my widget, let me sell it. But also like, it's a more, I think if I hear you right, it's a more complex sale. That's the right way to say it.
How I simply describe it is if you can easily just put it in your shopping cart online or in a store, those are not my prospects. Those are not my clients, right? It's something a little bit more, it requires an expert or some creative person to put together the right solution for that particular situation.
Okay. I see. Got it. Okay. So we have a lot to dig into. So I was thinking, Merritt, that we could start to start with something that I heard you say recently and that I've been having a lot of conversations with in our community about having a relationship with reality and how solving today's challenges is not the same as yesterday's. In fact, we did an innovation jam session this morning in our membership site, and we did a whole worksheet around, are you solving yesterday's challenges? Which, by the way, is only 2 or 3 months ago. That's how fast the world is changing, right? Are you solving today's challenges? But I want to tackle that. I'd love to hear your perspective on it, because I've heard you say a few things. And tackle that from a sales perspective, because as some of these people are probably watching, heard me say earlier, I got this call from this SEO company that told me they could fix some of my broken links and, I don't know, optimize my blog pages. And I was like, that's not a problem I have right now. If you call me in February, maybe. But now I've moved on to whole different problems in that same realm. So just from what you're seeing in your experience, how do you think about this and what advice do you give?
Well, I routinely say that, you know, you don't want to be in an argument with reality. And the reality is that life changed for everybody, in February, March, right? And I think it really comes down to, you know, so if you're selling or going to market with the same messaging, the same language and the same processes and systems that you did in January, you are in an argument with reality. In that example that you gave, like if you're selling the same stuff in the same way, people look at you like, do they have any idea what's going on? Like, plugged in at all? Do you have an internet connection? Like what what is going on with you? So, I was sharing with a group. I was doing a training on some emotional intelligence and how that impacts our sales strategies these days. And I was talking to them about the distinctions with empathy and assertiveness. So I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
If you have low empathy and high assertiveness, then what that means is you are probably going to be going out to market with the same messaging, right? Like, I don't care what's going on. I'm going to make my sales numbers. I'm going to build my business.
And it's so, kind of a little bit more internally driven, right? Like, I need to do to get this done.
Yes. Yeah. I don't care what's going on. I got my agenda, and I'm going to force my agenda on you. That's what a low empathy, high assertiveness person would do. Conversely, if you were high empathy, low assertiveness, those people aren't making any sales calls anyway. But honestly, they probably weren't making any sales calls in January either. But now they have an excuse. Right,
like we're all struggling. Nobody's buying right now.
I don't want to. We just got to get through this, and then I'll turn on sales.
Right. So it's the and then statements.
Right. You didn't have the assertiveness to sell before. They're just using this as a very convenient excuse to do what they probably weren't doing from a sales perspective anyway.
Can I ask you a flip question on that for a second? Do you think there are buyers who are using that as well to have a fight with reality, to delay what they need to do, to stay comfortable and warm and let their primal brain, right? Because I just think about a conversation I had where the person on the other end, it was all everything you just said, but from the buyer perspective too.
Yeah, well, and if you're wearing a sales hat, right, whether you're a business leader, you're, you know, running a department, or you're just needing to be influential with your teams, not necessarily selling a thing, we need to bring an appropriate level of empathy and assertiveness to that conversation to establish an environment where a buyer of our ideas or our products and services can be receptive and open to hearing what we have to say and be open to having a real, honest, straightforward dialogue about what their needs really are. And that's what people are getting wrong right now, is we're not, you know, we've got to take the lead role in creating that environment that makes it okay to have a business conversation.
So give me an example of how we do that, because I'm really, from a sales and a buying perspective, I think I love that kind of how you're framing this, of this empathy and assertiveness. I never really thought about the two. Will you give me an example? I get out of whack, right? No empathy, or frankly, too much empathy, but give me an example of a balance. What would that look like?
Yep. A balance would be, I might say to you, you know what, Tamara, it feels almost awkward to have an old-fashioned business conversation in light of everything that's going on right now. But if you're open to it, can we just put that aside for a moment and talk about something that we actually have the ability to control in our lives for a little bit? And that's acknowledging, look, there's a lot going on for all of us.
Yeah.
But also being asserting, and assertive is distinct from aggressive, right? That's not aggressive. Like, well, I don't care what's going on. Let's just talk. It's assertive is, I'm saying what needs to be said. You need to do business. I need to do business. Let's do it in an appropriate way, given the situation. And that's how, and the magic phrase, the one I've become known for, is, are you open to?
Mm.
And when I say that, you know, nobody doesn't want to be open, right?
Right.
Like, oh, I'm not open to that.
No, I'm not open to a conversation.
Well, then you're a jerk. So everybody wants to be open. So that's the phrase. And you just say, you know, if you're open to it, let's just have a conversation about something that is within our level or our realm of control. Because everything feels so out of control right now. Can we just deal with this one little piece of life? In business.
And I would venture to say, right, that works whether you're in a quote unquote traditional sales situation, or if you are trying to present your ideas to leadership to get buy-in, because that's the same. At the end of the day, it's the same thing, right? You're selling something and the other person has to agree to it. Is that kind of, are you open to this conversation? And it's interesting because at first, when you first said it, I thought, well, does that make me look weak? Like, I know we need to have this conversation. But really what you're doing is allowing them to say yes before you continue on so that they are receptive to it, which is the key there, right? And I want to ask you one other thing about sales. And sorry, this is a tangent, but it just, what you were saying brought this up for me. So I've heard other people talk about in the time that we're in the crazy uncertainty. And I think, Mary, you and I have had this conversation on the side, but I think you and I would both state that this is the way it is. Like, change, yep. This is it. So we got to figure out how to manage the situation, right? Because there's no like, oh, Monday's here, now everything's back. Like, it's not, happening. So,
nope.
No, this is it. We got to figure out how to move forward. So, but I've heard other people say, just be there. Just be there for people. And that's the way I'm saying it sounds like I'm such a mean person. I don't mean it selfishly. I just mean, well, yeah, but I'm in business, right? Like, I got to make money. I got to get ideas. I got to get traction on my ideas. I got to get buy-in. So what is your advice to people who are just trying to like keep the relationship? And again, I love relationships. It's not about that. It's just, I'm also in business.
Yeah. You know what? I think that is, it's somewhat situational, right? Because you're going to have people that you're, you know, I think it is important to touch base, to check in with people that you do business with people that but it would be awkward. You know, I'm not going to cold call someone and go, just, you know, so just tell me, like, how are you? Like, I don't have that relationship, right? So
that's awkward. You're right. If someone called me that, I'd be like, what's your name again?
Right. So, but it's completely appropriate for me to reach out to my current clients, maybe to even reach out a little bit beyond that radius to people that I did business with many years ago to just say, hey, you know what? You popped up on my radar screen. I just want to check in with you. What are you working on? What's different in your world? So again, I'm interested and I am genuinely interested. I'm not asking questions in order to ram my solutions down their throats. Make a sale. I'm generally interested. So I think if you want to look at it like a two-phase process. So today I might just say, you know what? The only reason I'm calling is to just say, hey, what's going on in your world? Everybody's impacted by this. Anything I can do to help you, and just kind of leave it like that. But then I might also say, you know, if you're open to it at some point, maybe not today, maybe today is not appropriate, but I'd love to share with you how I've been shifting some of my offers in the business world. And I don't know if any of those would be appropriate for you in light of everything that's gone on today, but I'm certainly happy to share that if that would be of interest.
So
sorry,
let me interrupt you, Meredith. I was just saying what I really like about what you said is things that have shifted that we've shifted. So it implies you've got new things to offer, and you do because you have shifted. If you have, you're ahead of the game, right? You're not that SEO company I was talking about. Anyways, you said that quickly, but I wanted to bring that back because I do think just that fact that you're saying I've shifted and I feel your pain. So I want to launch that over to the other part of the question I had, which is, it seems like right now, and in some ways, I hope this part stays a little bit, Merit, because I actually like the connection, the authenticity it's allowing us to have in relationships. I think maybe we didn't spend time on before. But how do you think about really hearing and making sure that you're solving their today's challenges? Because as you and I talked about offline, I've talked about with the membership, my challenges of 2 months ago is not the same as it is now. And that I think is basically true across the board. There's very few that can say, oh no, everything I was dealing with in February in 2019, in January of 2020, is what I'm dealing with now. So how do you uncover and make sure that you're serving those new pains?
That's a great question. I think first what I've been working with my clients on is shifting their messaging about their offers. So for example, in January, I might have said, I do a lot of different things in my business. I speak at conferences. I am an opening keynoter for, you know, large events and da da da. And so if you're open to it, I'd be happy to talk with you about that. Well, that's completely off the table right now. So that's, part of it is being responsible in our messaging of the pains that we solve today. So today I would say, you know, I do a lot of different things in my business, but I'm working with entrepreneurs, business leaders who run organizations, and they're frustrated because everything has changed overnight and their teams can't wait around to see how this shakes out. They need to be proactive, but they need to be appropriate about it. And so they're really looking at how do we don't want the philosophy of how do we, you know, like why we should change our messaging. We just want some good messaging that will work. We need it prescribed and handed to us. And I'm, and that's now what I'm doing more and more for my clients. And so when I articulate my offer like that, it allows them to see themselves in it in light of today, as opposed to being so married to the way that I would describe the work that I do 3 months ago, which is completely irrelevant to their needs today.
So one thing I want to highlight in that, Merit, that I think is so important for all of us, and then we got a question that I'd like to get to, and that is that what you're saying is you're not trying to completely change up your knowledge, your expertise, your experience. What you're doing is really rearranging what you have in front of you, which, as we all know, is my definition of innovation, is thinking differently about what's right in front of you, right? To repackage it in a way that's more meaningful to the people on the other side. I think sometimes when we think of making that leap, we get stuck in this trap of thinking that means we have to blow everything up and start from scratch. And I mean, I know you and I know your world. And what you really just highlighted there was that you really heard the customers and how they need to receive your information, your offering, and maybe tweak your offering a little bit in terms of how you delivered it. But it's not to say everything has to blow up to make that happen. Maybe it does for some, but that's not the starting point. All right, let me get to the question. Okay. I'll start by saying I respect both of you so much. Well, thank you. We'll
thank you. We like you already.
Thank you for everything. I am a transition military officer and have been talking to a headhunter and well-respected CEO in Tampa. Because the transition to corporate America deals with sales and leadership, totally, right? And wow, you learn so much of that in the military. It's incredible. Is there any advice you both have from your experience or common trends with military officers that can help me? Tamara, I know you referenced the use of they in your podcast, and that has been so powerful in the military and fixed so many. Oh, Travis. Hi, Travis. Okay, he said his name. Okay, so first of all, thank you for that. And let me just say before I let Merit have the floor, because I know she has a lot to say in this part, is that if you have my book, Travis, I don't know if you do, in the book, I talk about an incredible story of a Navy officer who actually led a submarine ship, a nuclear submarine ship. And he talks about how we had to force him out of the word using they and to create accountability. And the one example that I kind of shared in it was, he says that someone in maintenance didn't have the parts they needed. And he went to them and said, is this done? And they said, no. And what they wanted to say was, you know, supplies didn't get me the parts I needed in time. But anything they was not allowed. They didn't get me the parts in time. So he had to split and say, I don't have what I need yet to get it done. And he was talking about how the removal of they really changed the culture of the entire team. So just for everyone who's listening, kind of that's what that reference is to. And I'm glad, Travis, that you picked up on that. So Merit, let's talk about that.
You know, I think that in order to be more influential with others, whether it's in a leadership role and military and business, we have to understand what has influence over us.
Oh, so I was not expecting that. Go on.
So I think that in making any transition like that, you want to really look at the strengths that had you be successful in one domain and how those apply in another domain. I do a lot of work with emotional intelligence. And so that's always one of my go-to places to just identify the kinds of specific strengths that you have. And and there are definitely some trends that I've seen from the folks with military experience that I've done assessments for, and some of the strengths that they've really worked on and developed. And you could see that they've had those as strengths. But like I was talking about the empathy and assertiveness, that's the kind of stuff that when you see your wiring from a foundation of like your own mindset. And then you're layering on top of that, okay, these are the business skills that I need to learn. And you lean into the strengths that you have to learn areas where you may not yet be as strong. That would be one of the main things that I would recommend putting a little focus and attention on as you make a transition into a different domain like business.
Do you think when understanding, let me take this to a different place. One of the things that kind of I've experienced is that and Travis, this is particularly for you too, what makes you unique is what makes you valuable. So it's your strengths and it's kind of what you bring to the table that other people can't. And I will say I've seen incredible people transition from military, but transitioned into business. And part of what's allowed them to stand out is they have experiences in leadership and teamwork and collaboration and hitting objectives and not hitting objectives in a way that the rest of us don't, frankly. And it's a matter of how you language that in a way that the corporate world hears it, because that's we don't use the same language, right? We don't have the same language. When you think about selling yourself, Marin, selling your ideas, where does kind of what's the balance between speaking the customer or the leadership purpose you're trying to get buy-in from their language and their perspective, balancing that with what you bring to the table?
Well, I always want to start with what's important to them and how they language things. I'm always, very cognizant of the words that they use, especially the words that describe the emotions that they have about the things that frustrate them or concern them or overwhelm them. I'm listening for those words because I know that, we might make decisions intellectually, but we buy emotionally. Yeah.
And that's true in a B2B sale too, right? I just want to clear that up because I get a lot of pushback from people who go, but this isn't like, I'm not selling a phone or lipstick. I'm like, yeah, but you're still selling to a human.
Yes, exactly. And somebody's getting yelled at. Someone's breathing down their necks to make a decision. Yeah. 12 other things can't happen until this one thing happens. And there's all this, there's human being stuff that happens. So there's always going to be emotion. And so I just really listen. I always put things into their world because my language is a whole lot less important to them than hearing what I've picked up on about their language, how they phrase their issues and concerns and challenges. That's what they're listening for to see if I really understand them. So that's, I think it's more about putting things into their world.
So I think that is a great lesson in transition and change too, as you're trying to figure out like how to transition and change into the new era that we are in. I hate to say new normal because I feel like it's not really about that. It's more about kind of the new paths and how you get there and what you decide to create. But part of that really is listening to everybody else around you, right? And what they're dealing with and what they're struggling with. You talk a little bit about persuasion in your work and how to be persuasive. So what does that mean to you? I feel like it's one of those words where we probably have, you ask 10 people and you get 10 different, definitions of the same word.
Yeah. It goes back to what I said earlier, to be more influential with others, we really do need to have understanding what has influence over us. And so being persuasive is really about, I can't, if I convince you of something, then you will recognize that. You may not recognize it in the moment because I'm good. if I'm pushing.
Later, right? Later, you're like, did I really mean to agree to that?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I get that that's never a good strategy. You never want to convince you of something. But if I'm persuasive, that means I'm really good at getting permission up front, first of all, to ask some questions. And then because I'm asking good questions, you have an opportunity to discover for yourself what, deeper things that you think about that issue or that you have more of a reason to want to solve this problem or whatever it is, right? So I think the art of being persuasive is really about being responsible for asking the right questions in an appropriate comfortable way that allows somebody to experience an emotion that I can help them avoid in a conversation as opposed to in real life. So my mindset is, I'm not doing you any favors by not having a really tough conversation with you, right. So that you can discover for yourself that you need what I have, or that you want to follow me as a leader or whatever it is, right? So being persuasive is more around the art of asking good questions and creating that environment where it's safe for them to tell you the real answers. And I think, you know, I can't really, if I try to be persuade you, that's more like convincing. But if I ask you questions, you can persuade yourself because I've led you down that path.
Okay, so there are so many good nuggets in here, and I want to focus on two of them, although there's more and more. So one is, you said to experience an emotion. And, you know, one of the things that we know in neuroscience, which relates a lot to sales, or it relates a lot to relationship, everything, is we actually experience an emotion. I can't remember what the numbers are, but it's like a tenth of a tenth of a tenth of a second. And we experience it before we even know what's happening. And our responses are actually very emotionally based. We don't even know it, right?
Yes.
So will you just talk a little bit about, when you say, like, we're trying to get someone to experience an emotion, how you think about that and how you actually do that? Because the neuroscience shows, so either way, an emotion is happening, right? But we're trying to guide them down a certain path.
Yeah. I mean, first I create some, you know, rapport so that they're comfortable. And yeah. I think the other magic ingredient is that I let them know that they're not alone. So I might tell a third party story, or, you know, like, I don't know if this is your issue at all, or if this is a concern or frustration. So I'm going to use
the clients is that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep. No, recently I was having this conversation and with a CEO of a company about your size, and gosh, they were so overwhelmed with blah, 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 blah. And so I'm creating an environment in that conversation where they can step into acknowledging that they also share a similar emotion without feeling like they're the only one.
Right. So the other thing that I love about what you just did there, Merit, is as you were sharing the third party story of, like, gosh, I've been talking to these other CEOs of other companies this size, and they've been sharing how they're really overwhelmed, or they're feeling a lot of intense pressure, or whatever it is. You're really giving them permission to be more vulnerable and yes. to pull back the layers and make the conversation deeper. And I would venture to say, right, that, tell me if I'm wrong, that the more real and vulnerable and deep and all that, those things that you can do with a person, the more likely you are to be persuasive, to get the deal, right? Because you're connecting with them on a much deeper level. So, okay. So that's helpful. So here's the second thing I want to dig in with you. And I know that you and I have some training in this area as well, since we've done some business training together. But you talk about getting the real answers. And one of the things that I've experienced over and over again, and I know our members in the tribe have, and we've talked about this, is, you know, somebody asks you a question. Merit, why do you think that idea will work given XYZ, right? And oftentimes that's actually not the real question. And then you ask that question of someone, and the answer they give is often not the real answer. It's not real. It's the superficial answer. How do you get past the layers, you know, of people holding stuff close to their vest? And I don't know about you, but I at least give people the benefit of the doubt. I assume they're not trying to lie to me. They're not trying to be all, like, you know, manipulative or hold off. I think that's just human nature. But how do we pull back the layers of that onion so we get to the real things that need to be said and the real answers?
Oof, all right.
The Oprah couch moment for us. And by the way, Travis, thank you. That was very helpful. So you are welcome. I'm glad you asked.
Well, first of all, if I understand your question correctly, so let's say somebody says, you know, okay, Merit, tell me why you're different.
Right?
Like, if the minute I say, you know, well, let me tell you all the reasons I'm different. I do this and I do that and blah, blah, blah. And as soon as I say any of that, I'm no different than anybody else. So I might turn that around and just say, well, I could tell you all the reasons why I think what I offer is different in the marketplace, but let me ask you a question. What have you heard so far that sounded different? Or you know, so I, right? Like,
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that way, whatever they say is going to be the right answer. Well, you know, so far you've asked me a lot of questions. Oh, okay. There it is. You guessed it. You got it. That was it. So I'm going to use that same strategy in a lot of different applications.
Right.
And now I'm already blanking on the second part of your question, but well, I know that fits somewhere.
Well, it was a layered question, funny enough. I just want to have this conversation and get your advice around how we get to the real questions, the real answers, the real conversations, because we tend to talk on surface. And again, I don't think it's because we always mean to. I think we're conditioned to do that. And sometimes we don't know what we're thinking. It takes us a second. So particularly when you're in a sales situation and the person on the other side of the table, you know, is saying, well, I need more understanding here, or I do not get this. I'm not sure that's always really what they're getting at.
Yeah, I tend to just say some version of that. I'd say, well, I start to answer the question, and then it's almost like I interrupt myself and respond with another question. Mm. So for example, in your example, you might say, Merritt, how does your process work? Well, the first part of my process is, hold on a second. I could probably talk your ear off about my process. Let me ask you this. You must have asked me for a reason. What specifically about that process is of interest to you? Oh, well, I wanted to know about how the timeline works.
Right. And now you're getting to the real conversation that you need to have. Okay. Yeah. That's exactly what thank you, Merritt. By the way, I've seen, for all of you watching or who will be listening later, I've seen Merritt in action on this, and it's brilliant. And it's one of the things that I always go on. It's one of the, let me tell you why you're different. It's one of the things that I always try to remember from my training with you is that to ask a question before I answer, because oftentimes their second and third answer is actually way more insightful in terms of what they're really trying to get at and what you need to, the objection you actually need to deal with. Can we dig a little bit on this into objections actually? Because let me ask you, do you find that there are some right now that are very situationally based that are just people trying to not make decisions? What do those look like and how do we overcome them?
I think there's some of it is real. So let's start with some people legitimately have reasons why they need to not make a decision immediately while they're, you know, really seeing how things go. So let's just say that there's, you know, if it's like a bell curve, there's going to be some that is legitimate. Yeah. And then there's going to be a lot that, you know, people can, they can give us an excuse about, you know, this isn't the right time and I need to wait and da, 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 da. And that makes sense to us sometimes as just human beings dealing in the same circumstances. So we're less likely to push. Mm-hmm. The interesting piece is how there's a lot of science and theory of how you buy impacts how you sell. Have you ever heard that one?
Yes. Yeah. I want to dig into that in a second when we finish this example.
Yeah. So just pay attention to the excuses or the delays, stalls, mm-hmm. and objections that seem to make sense to you as a buyer. And are you just buying into that when you're in a selling role because it's easy? So I would just encourage people to just, you don't have to, it's not about pushing back, but it's just about asking one more question. So I might say, you know, I can appreciate that and there is a lot of uncertainty, but let me ask you this. Let's pretend, which is always a great way, pretend that, you know, this one element wasn't a problem or, you know, blah, blah, blah. I might just, you know, throw something out there as a possibility. Right. You know, would it then be appropriate to make a decision about this element that is what I'm offering, right? So rather than accept the put off as the truth, just test it. Just have an attitude of just being curious and just testing it, because sometimes it's not the truth.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying about, first of all, just assume the best, that they're not trying to like push you off, but maybe they can't. We'll get those people off the table for a second, but there are those that just simply can't. But also recognizing that that also may feel real for them. So we have to help them get over that. It's not that they're just like, let's see, I'm going to go with excuse number three today. Now's not the time due to uncertainty, right? That right. They really might feel that and believe that. Can we talk a little bit though about this, how you, let me see if I get it right. How you sell is how you buy. So
yes,
talk about that. Cause that I really want all of us in the community to pay attention to that. Cause I think it's the same is true for how we ignite innovation. Right. And I think it kind of applies to a lot of things. So talk about that.
I've done a lot of work in this area. So my philosophy is there's three things that you need to be successful in business, you know, sales, leadership, whatever. And it comes down to your mindset, the mechanics of what you're doing, right? Yeah. The mechanics of selling and the motion, right? Being in motion, taking action. But everything kind of layers on top of that mindset. And mindset for me breaks down into three categories and I am going to answer your question very deliberately, so it's sort of your internal mind. And those are the beliefs, the things you say to yourself, internal mind, what I say to myself. And those are the beliefs I have about decision makers, money, timelines, my own self-worth, all of that, right? Then there's behavioral mind. That's what my actions say to other people. If you've done DISC profiles and Myers-Briggs and all that falls into this category. So that's, you know, how I am being out there in the marketplace and what that tells you about how I am. And then there's the emotional mindset. And that is a probably even deeper level of really understanding like empathy and assertiveness and self-regard and impulse control and all these other emotional intelligence attributes. Right. So those are three areas. Now, what you're talking about when I lead programs and do training sessions around how you buy is how you sell, we're dealing with the belief systems in that internal mind. So the first thing you really want to do is kind of take an inventory of some of the beliefs you have about money. Like if you think $1,000 is a lot of money, but you're out there selling $100,000 solutions,
you're going to have a problem
stuck in your throat. Right. And I can remember, early in my career, I was selling radio advertising and we could manipulate a radio advertising schedule based on the day part. So if you gave me, like, I could only run your commercial at 7:18 a.m., that was expensive, right? Because I only had 1 minute of inventory that I could sell you. But if you gave me between 7 a.m. and 12 a.m., I could put it anywhere. You gave me flexibility, the price went down. So I would sit there at the computer and try to manipulate the schedule that brought the price down so that they got the frequency they needed for the advertising campaign to work, but it wasn't a high number. And I negotiated so many deals down before I understand that my recent college graduate living on ramen noodle budget was not the same as this corporate budget. So how I would make buying decisions was impacting how I was selling. And once I learned that, once somebody shared that philosophy with me, it completely altered how I related to selling interactions. And I had to do some internal mindset work around my own money concepts. And that shifted my ability to transact bigger deals.
So one of the things that someone told me once is, so first of all, there's a lot of layers in like your views on money in general, right? And I think if we were to go, let's say, Mary, you and I went shoe shopping and a group of us went. And I think what we'd notice is that like some of us look at the shoe and go, oh, that's the design I've been looking for, right? Like that's the shoe, the color, the height that would totally match the outfit in my closet. Another person goes, well, what's the price point of the shoes? Like, I'm going to go in the $50 to $100 price points, right? Or whatever. Another person might go, well, what's the brand that I'm looking for? Like, we all have these starting points in how we buy. And I have to imagine that that then translates into not only how we sell, but how we hear the objections from the people on the other side of the table. So if you say to me, if I'm your ramen example of like $1,000 is a lot of money, right? And you say to me, this might be out of budget. I immediately am like, yeah. Versus maybe it's just a matter of like reworking the value. But I don't hear that. I hear it's too much money because that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different things. You know, it's not just about the money. It's also about the decision-making process, right? So in that shoe example, like if I saw the perfect shoes in the first store I went to, if I'm the type of person who's like, okay, I hunt and kill the shoes that I want and I found them and I'm buying them and I'm taking them home, then yeah. I might not need to look around for, you know, 12 different stores. But I might be the person who says, well, you know, that's the first one I saw. I don't know what else is out there. Maybe I can only buy something with a coupon. I mean, there's a lot of things that factor in besides the money in terms of how we buy impacts how we sell. So I think what I would say to your audience is really just be observant first about how you make buying decisions personally. Yeah. And notice if there's any relationship to the objections, stalls, and put-offs that you hear that you are automatically vulnerable to. And, you know, sometimes over the years, sometimes I've given people assignments like, okay, go shopping and buy something.
I accept.
Not thinking about it. If I bought something $500 without thinking about it, just I like to make sure that, you know, unless there's a spouse related and you have to like get permission or something, that's a whole nother issue. But, you know, sometimes it's just it's paying attention to how you buy and then noticing what's happening in your transactions and then seeing if you can make any shifts.
I think that would be a great thing to do. I think that would be a great exercise for all of us to do for the rest of this week is just pay attention to how we buy. And I would say if you're not out there shopping, how we look at our bills when they come in too, because I think we have a similar kind of thought process that go through. Like when I get my, for example, for me, things need to be really tangible. So when I get my water bill, I'm like, was that worth 100 some bucks to water the lawn? Right? Like, I can't see, I don't feel the benefit. The same way as when I get my cable bill, I'm like, oh, that's my internet and my TV and my NFL ticket. And like, I get it. Like I can feel what that's about. So I always, my vulnerability merit is when someone says to me, like, I'm just not sure what I'm getting here. I'm like, yeah. Right. Like, because that's how I feel about spending money is like, I need to be able to really experience it, feel it. So I think that'd be a great exercise for all of us. Mara, before we kind of close up, I could ask you a million other questions. So helpful. Where can people go to find you? I know you've got some amazing stuff on your website. So talk a little bit about that. I think it would be remiss not to give people that opportunity.
Well, thank you. My website is meritbasedbusiness.com. And I'm super excited because as I've been listening to the marketplace and what people need and just shifting my business away from some of the live event things that I did and putting my expertise more into some digital offers. So I just launched the Merit Based Business Academy and I'm constantly loading, you know, new offers, some of our digital programs. I have a group coaching program that I'm doing and some exclusive private VIP coaching offers and some, I know I talked a little bit about the emotional intelligence assessments. That's probably one of my favorite things that I've been doing lately with leadership teams is just really giving them a sense of who they are and what the strengths are of the team overall, and then how to raise the level of that leadership team so that their people are wanting to give their A+ effort. And then the other thing I'm super excited about, one of the things I just put into the Business Academy is a persuasive proposal pack. So you know how you spend a lot of time trying to like get a brand new custom proposal, you know, looking right and all the elements of it. So I kind of took the best proposals that I've done over the years and put it into a template that's easy to edit. But it baked in has all of the sales strategies, like all of the, this is why you want to have this conversation right here in this part of the play. So it's kind of cool. So that's a new offer. And then there's also the Smarter Sales Show podcast, which I did with my co-host, Julie Holmes. And we talk about, she's an expert in technology. And so I'm doing the sales technique expertise to the party, and she brings the technology. So the show is really about the tech and technique you need to sell more and stress less. And actually today we are taking episode 12 of season one live, and that will published anyway. And that has our summary of all the lessons that we both learned over 11 episodes. So you can kind of listen to that episode, hear our favorites, and then go listen to the earlier episodes where we go into more detail about the different tech and technique to sell more and stress less.
So that was awesome. And in the podcast, we'll put in the show notes all those links. So thank you. Go get Merit stuff. And by the way, there's a prize to anyone who can accurately tell me why our last names, Khan and Gondor, might be the two most amazing last names to have on the same video screen ever. And I mean ever. Ever. We know why. Sci-fi. You got scared, right?
I love it.
That's my okay. I won't give any more hints away. I really makes me happy to see those two last names, Gondor and Khan, side by side. Okay, Merit, the last question, the last piece of advice I want from you is how you think about selling your ideas or your products and services, whatever it is. When you're the difference between selling when you are in a relationship with reality, as you say, or when you are fighting reality. I kind of want to bring it back to that because I think that's the place a lot of us are really going, oh my gosh, I need to really be in a relationship with reality right now. And that's going to change how I do things.
I think when you try to sell from a perspective where you're in an argument with reality, you'll find it's an uphill battle. You'll be pulling your hair out. It's how you know you're doing that is it's all about you. When you sit there and you're trying to force sales or force your solutions on a marketplace that's not receptive to it, you are in an argument with reality. And all you need to do to shift that is to listen first for how you can serve the reality of the marketplace that you serve and how you can sort of take your expertise, maybe it's repackage it, represent it, you know, rethink the way you deliver it. It's still the same offer, but it's just in a different format, perhaps. That may or may not be the switch you need to make, but you'll know you're no longer in an argument with reality when the marketplace responds to you, thank you. That's exactly what we were hoping for.
So can I add a story to this, Mara, which I think you kind of been too, but I think that this brings home what you're saying, and I want to end with kind of your thoughts on this. So, and as my community knows, I like to pull back the curtain and be fully transparent. And you know, a lot of speakers in our world too. So a lot of us went through this. I think in February, March, when this all came down, the rug got pulled out from a lot of us because most of us do our business in live, like you were saying, live events, right? That is how we deliver, whether that's a conference, a client meeting, a strategic retreat, a keynote, whatever, we deliver through live events. And that got taken away, whether we like it or not. And for a lot of people, they then said, oh, I'll just do what I do live virtually. And I'm not opposed to that, don't get me wrong. But that to me felt like a fight with reality because when I looked at the marketplace had different needs.
Yes.
So, and there's I have a whole 10 minute burst on jumping the curve, which Travis, I think actually you would love, which is all about how do you find that new curve of success when your life cycle, when you hit the cliff. But I think that's part of the reason why I would suspect you, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, started our membership sites, right? Your academy, my membership sites, because we said, wait a minute, My expertise of enabling innovation, enabling leadership, that all matters still, but how I'm delivering isn't relevant anymore. And it's not going to be relevant for a long time. And putting a Band-Aid on and just going, well, let me just go virtual, wasn't actually solving market problems. It was putting a Band-Aid on it. Like I could eke by on that. But, and to your point about thank you, when I started the membership, it was like, where have you been all my life? And I was like, well, I didn't know we needed this, right?
Yeah.
So, and honestly, I wouldn't wish this on any of us ever and ever again, but that forced transition allowed me to do what you're saying. So anyways, I just throw that in there as a real world example of what you're talking about, Merit, because I do think it's so powerful when we're listening to the marketplace.
Oh, it's incredibly powerful. And I watch so many of our professional speaking colleagues, keynoters, you know, just try to take what they did on stage and put that in a virtual environment. And I kind of looked, I looked around, I observed, and the way that I have been thinking about my business, you know, since that time, is that I just have considered that right now I'm in virtual business school, and I have done everything that I've needed to do to learn how to, well, first I listened to the marketplace. What do you need? And as they got more and more comfortable with Zoom meetings and digital platforms and, you know, ways to take in information. But I looked at, you know, I don't want to, at first, I think I fell into that same trap, right? Of just delivering what I did on stage and just doing it virtually. But it didn't feel the same, and it wasn't as valuable. So then I said, well, what if I just reimagined completely, right? I was innovative about how I delivered that in the first place. Then I thought, well, okay, so now what I do is I do these short little video trainings you could watch on your own time, when it's convenient. And then when we come together as a group, we're talking about the experience, what you learned, how you applied it. Right. It's a much more rich conversation than if I took that same, you know, 15, 20 minutes to teach every single time we're on a call, and then I could build out. So I am super excited about how, you know, the innovation, what it provides in the future. But I think you have to bring a mindset of, and let's pretend that all of this was really good for the future of how I do business.
Let's pretend. Just for a moment.
You know, if that's true, then, and I may not know how to execute all that yet, but that's easy, right? That I can learn that. But if I'm really able to deliver in a way that's more, that's better and more appropriate for the marketplace that of the future, that's good for them. That's good for me.
Right.
So I think there's a lot to be excited about.
I think those are very wise words and a sentiment to end on. So Merit, thank you for joining. And thank you. Just so you all know, Merit agreed to this last minute. I think I texted you yesterday or the day before. I can't remember. We were texting about something else. And I was like, oh, that's fascinating. Do you want to come on?
All right.
I am so confident in Merit's skills that she had no prep. I didn't send my questions ahead of time like I do with other guests. I just was like, we're going to get on and talk. So Merit, way to crush it. Thank you for your insights.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tamara. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.